Is Virginia wearing blackface? Presidential politics and the State of the Union, all together on this episode of The Uprising.
LibertyNation.com. They are the resistance, but we are the uprising. With Scott Cosenza and Tim Donner.
There's not going to be a President Donald Trump.
Hey, a president. Can you believe it?
I love the poorly educated.
The voters have guaranteed themselves slavery, economic disaster.
I can't believe I'm losing to this guy.
You could put half of Trump's supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables.
I have never met with Russians.
Our elected representatives can abuse subordinates and then secretly use a slush fund of our money to pay them off.
Black Lives Matter, the Antifa movement, are interested in preserving the fabric of America.
Welcome back to The Uprising, the podcast at LibertyNation.com. This is Scott D. Cosenza with Tim Donner. And thank you all for joining us. Tim, thank you.
How are you today? If you're going to use your middle initial, then I should too. It's Timothy E. Donner,
yes,
just so you know.
Well, you've got probably like three other initials, right?
No, that's right.
Sort of Mayflower.
Of the manner born thing. It's a,
let it all, like George Herbert Walker Bush, right?
Yeah, let's start the whole thing with class warfare. That'll be fun.
Absolutely. Well, actually,
I'm a victim, Scott. I'm a victim.
You know, that actually is an interesting point. So I think I made the point on last week's podcast that that Howard Schultz would not have been considered a white guy when he was a kid. He would have been considered an ethnic Jew. Now, you have never been confused with anything other than the straightest, the whitest of the white, okay? For real. And it's funny because we have this meltdown in Virginia where we both live and work over blackface right now. It's really kind of, it's crazy what's happening. So just, can you give everybody, for people who don't know, give a 30-second or less thumbnail sketch of what has happened about blackface in Virginia.
If I can do it in 30 seconds, then I'm in the wrong job.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so first, Ralph Northam, the governor, they discover apparently a disgruntled classmate who was really upset about Northam's position on fourth trimester abortion, essentially, outed him by bringing forth a picture from his not high school, not college, but medical school yearbook with a picture, which is now gone viral all over the world.
Or two pictures. Well, the whole...
Well, there's one picture with two guys.
With the collage, right. There's a couple pictures in there, and one of them is
a guy in a Klan robe. There's a guy in a Klan robe and hood, and another guy with a black face. And so he actually waited 3 or 4 hours, but got it in time for the 6 o'clock news cycle last Friday.
Right.
Apologized to anyone he may have offended, said it was awful, I don't know how I could have done it, blah, blah, blah. But the next day he comes out and says, well, wait a minute, that actually wasn't me. Too little, too late. And his revelation that he had, in fact, dressed up in blackface, but not in that instance, but had in another time dressed up as Michael Jackson. And then in the most... It has to be the most bizarre single political moment that I can remember in recent history. He offered to moonwalk at the press conference. So you had every Democrat.
Let me just interrupt and say right now, black or white, young or old, I love anybody who can pop like that.
I agree.
Okay?
I agree, because I sure as heck couldn't do it. But I mean, he had calls from every Democrat in the entire country calling for his resignation.
Right.
And they were salivating at the prospect of elevating the young upstart, rising star African-American lieutenant governor named Justin Fairfax.
Who happens to be a Democrat as well.
Of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then, boom, out of the blue comes an allegation of sexual assault, 15 years ago by a woman who had made it.
A credible allegation.
It seemed to be credible.
By a university professor.
Well, let's put it this way. If you're going to say it's credible, then you have to say that Christine Blasey Ford's was credible.
Right,
I mean, for the sake of objectivity, it's a similar situation from a woman in a similar profession
except
in a similar part
fact,
of the country.
Except for the fact that in the Blasey Ford scenario, Kavanaugh was accused of a physical assault that fell short of what we consider to be a sexual assault. And in this case, we have an allegations of a completed sexual assault.
It's true. And the other big difference is that is that Brett Kavanaugh said he never knew this woman, never saw her, wasn't there. Whereas Justin Fairfax, the lieutenant governor of Virginia, right. said, yes, I did have a consensual affair.
Right.
And because he couldn't just deny it, I guess he felt he couldn't. But the woman said, yeah, it started out consensual with just kissing, making out, and then he forced her into oral sex. So
and
now.
Then, and then the third card fell.
And then the third card fell. Well, at least, Virginia Democrats said, we have the attorney general as well, until he revealed this week that he had dressed
dressed up in blackface.
Mm-hmm. And so now you've got a trio of scandals with the three statewide officers, all Democrats. And the delicious part of it, Scott, is that if all three of them resign, which as a Democrat these days, you know, you were supposed to believe the woman automatically, because that's what happened with Christine Blasey Ford.
Hashtag believe all women.
Hashtag believe all women.
Yeah.
So then that would put the lieutenant governor out of play. And then you've got these two blackface governor and attorney general. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're going to continue to have any position of authority in the state. But if all three of them go down, you've got a Republican who's the Speaker of the House and fourth in line, who would become governor. And you want to really make this even more bizarre. Do you know how that Speaker of the House got his position?
Tell me.
They picked his name out of a hat in a tied race.
How did I not know
this? A tie, flat-footed tie for the last seat
in
the—
Between
in the,
who and who?
And his name is Cox,
uh-huh.
okay? And they picked his name out of a hat because he finished in a flat-footed tie. The last race finished in a flat-footed tie. So it could just as easily be a Democrat Speaker of the House, but for the flip of a coin, or mm-hmm. in this case. So this is the most bizarre political imbroglio that we can ever remember. It's just too bizarre to even sort of get your hands around.
Are great hypocrisies revealed in this story, and I appreciated your statement that if you think that this woman, the accuser of the lieutenant governor is credible, then you have to give that credibility nod to Blasey Ford. And I always said that I didn't think that Blasey Ford was lying. But I have not examined these lieutenant governor allegations to the point where I really want to speculate on whether I think they're true or not.
But the issue isn't even whether you think they're true or not. The issue is that the Democrats have set the bar
right.
that all women must be believed.
Well,
because that's true. And she's come out publicly.
But let me just talk about the hypocrisy.
She's described the details.
Let me just talk about the other hypocrisy that I think is revealed, Tim, which is on the one hand, you have Republicans who, if this were a popular Republican governor, would be saying, I firmly believe it was however many years ago he was in college. It may not even be him. What are we talking about here? Let's move along. Leave him be. Who are now saying he has to resign because of these decades-old photos. And you have Democrats who would have said, if it was a Republican governor, they would have marched into Richmond and burned down the governor's mansion if this guy didn't resign, who are saying,
right.
well, let's take a second look at this and, you know, maybe it wasn't all that bad.
Well, they don't really know what to do, Scott, because they know that they've been cornered. They've been cornered by their own words.
So many of them have. You can never be woke enough, Tim, and the ball
yes.
will always keep moving. So even if you're one of these people who is on the party to, like, destroy somebody today, in 6 months, it may be a new thing. Like, you didn't even know that you weren't supposed to, you know, right. call tall people tall or something like that. And with that in mind, one of the left's favorite primetime, in the daytime, critics of the right, Joy Behar, may have a problem here with some blackface issues. Why don't you go ahead and play that clip, please?
All right. This is, the joy of Behar.
In the New York Times, they had an op-ed piece in praise of naturally curly hair. They say that it's making a comeback.
When did
Are you excited?
Leave? I've always had curly hair. Y'all late.
Is that you, Joy? Oh, you know this picture.
Oh, Joy, is that you?
Yes.
Joy, that is you?
Yes.
Joy, are you
Wait.
Black?
No, I know.
The joy of Behar. Yeah, she dressed up as she put in the adjective, beautiful African
That's exactly
queen.
Right. And It's kind of interesting. It's so hilarious. She says that she wore makeup. They said, oh, did you wear blackface? I wore makeup a darker shade than my skin,
right?
How artfully put, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, so you mean you were in blackface. And by the way, having curly hair doesn't give you a pass. You
know? Darker than her skin color, which meant it could have been totally black shoe polish because that would fit the description.
They have a photo, by the way. It's a shame it's not a video. But the point is, the other squealing co-host that you heard alongside there in delight is Raven Simone, who is a famous actress. She has had her own show.
I've never heard of her.
She was on The Cosby Show. She's a co-host of The View, or has been for some time. So,
but there's like seven hosts.
She's as famous as one of The View co-hosts, in any case. And she's the one who, she basically said, acting like there's no problem with it. And she herself is an African-American. So it's like, is this supposed to be insulting, or is it cute when one of your co-hosts does it for a Halloween party, but not cute when Governor Northam did it 30 years ago? He has to resign. Nobody's saying Joy Behar has to resign. And just to boot, it's just kind of a – she says that – the original premise of Joy Behar reading that was that the New York Times said that curly hair was in, and Ms. Simone was basically saying, oh, where have you been? We've been doing that for a while. Well, she has past shoulder-length straight blonde hair in this clip, which is from 2016, by the way. So a little bit of a cultural appropriation there for Ms. Simone.
Turn of phrase.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice turn of phrase. Now, let me just play devil's advocate for a second. I mean, Governor...
You want to do Kingfisher and Mamus and Andy, or...
Oh, please. But Governor Northam, okay, he said he dressed up as Michael Jackson because he always liked Michael Jackson, and he was imitating him.
And Herring dressed up as Curtis Blow for the same reason.
As a black rapper, right. So... if they really like their music and they're dressing up, isn't that really a tribute to those artists?
When you go out on Halloween as Batman, it's not because you don't like Batman, okay?
Right. Okay,
it's because
you
love Batman.
Okay. I rest my case, counselor.
Yeah, same thing. For real. It's homage. It's tribute. Look, I had a Michael Jackson Thriller jacket when I was a kid, and I can tell you it was no small feat prying the dough out of my old man to lay out for that jacket.
I'm sure of that. I don't even know how the Democrats start to untangle all of this in Virginia, because they boxed themselves into a corner. Now, it might all have changed if Governor Northam had said at the beginning, look, that picture in the year, but that wasn't me. He sent it out right away. That wasn't me. I don't know why it got in there.
I'm not a yearbook editor.
And by the way, I've never seen the yearbook, which he said the next day. I've never seen that yearbook. But instead, he prevaricated and changed his story. And
I've
then
never
changed
seen a
it
law
again.
School yearbook. I don't know if there is one. I've never seen one.
Yeah. So
maybe
I think, you know, if he had, it's all in the way that he handled it. Mm-hmm. And he could have said, that was not me in blackface, because the only time I was in blackface was a tribute to Michael Jackson, whose work I admired greatly. And by the way, I know how to moonwalk.
Right. Before I found out he was a serial child sexual predator.
Yeah. Well, all right. Because this was 1984.
You're not allowed to like him now. No, that's the point, though. Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that it's not okay to like it.
I think so. There's a pressure now on Black Twitter for people to not play Michael Jackson because of it.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So if you're woke, then Michael Jackson is not cool.
Tim, there's so many things that are not cool if you're woke.
Okay, I just needed to.
In all instances, we have to check the political implication. You can't put a record on because you like the music, or eat a meal because you want it, because you think it's going to taste good. You always have to think about the political implications of how these things.
Is there anything that's not politicized? And by the way, I mean, everything we hear from politicians, and this is always true in the run-up to especially a presidential election, but usually it's in the sort of the year of the election or whatever, maybe a few months back. Now we're in February, early February, and I guarantee you that every single statement by every single politician across the country has to be put in the context of a presidential election. And I wanted to make this point, that the big difference between this election and previous elections is that the Democrats used to try and hide what their real ideology was. They would act like they were centrist, that they were reasonable, that they're
run to the middle.
Well,
in the primary, they'd run left. They'd run left, to the middle in the general. And the Republican would run middle in the general.
They'd run to the left, but not so dramatically that they couldn't tack back to the middle. This year, the Democrats are full on
woke,
socialist, whatever you want to call it. I mean, they're building themselves. They're painting the wokest of the declared or about to be declared. Well, we're going to find out because there's going to be a stampede to the left.
All right. Well, let's focus here on the candidates and the candidates to come. Amy Klobuchar, Senator Klobuchar.
What is the point of her running? Well, I don't even understand why
she's
running. All
the Democrats on the Judiciary Committee apparently have to run for president because she joins Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, who also has declared his. And I thought it was interesting. And she's so far and away my favorite in terms of I just like her. There's something about her that I like the cut of her jib. But she's got some problems. Apparently, she's so personally destructive to her staff.
I've seen that.
She has the highest staff turnover rate over the course of a number of years of any Senate office. And apparently there's some bad blood there. Now, there are some staffers who say, you know, she makes you work hard, and they've been there for a while. But that's not a good, you know.
I still don't even understand why she's running. What does she bring that Gillibrand doesn't bring, that Harris doesn't bring?
You're the woman, Tim. I mean, I don't understand what you mean. She's a woman.
Yeah, so then why is Cory Booker running?
She identifies
why is
as
Bernie
a woman.
Sanders going to run? Why is Joe Biden going to run?
If you're
a white man, what's the point of even entering
Booker,
the primary?
Tim.
And if you're not a woman of color, then you don't check enough of the boxes. So what's the point of Gillibrand and Klobuchar?
For her, the disability of being a woman in the patriarchy may be enough to carry her.
To sink her.
Well, listen, because she's white.
Well,
Scott. Let's jump right in then, Tim. I was going to save it, but I want to jump right into Cory Stewart. Now, hold on a second before you.
Not
before
Cory Stewart.
Excuse me, sorry.
Oh,
I know.
That's
no,
a
I'm gonna
very
stip that
different
out. I'm going to stick that out just because it's too local.
No, you leave it in.
All right. It's a Virginia politician.
Okay, folks, he was going to edit that out just so you know.
Booker.
And I shamed him.
Right.
Okay.
So, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker announced that he is running for president. And Tim, I just have this clip because, you know, Cory Booker identifies as an African-American man, and he's certainly faced. He's from Newark. He talks about Newark all the time, former mayor of Newark. And this is the kind of challenge that faced him and kind of forged him into the person that wants to be president of the United States. Go ahead, please.
He picked a symbolic day to do it. This is the first day of Black History Month. Booker is the second African-American candidate to jump into this Democratic primary after Senator Kamala Harris. And he is putting that heritage front and center in this race, not only because he will be targeting African-American voters, but because it is a key part of his own personal story. In an announcement video today, Booker nods to that history. His parents struggle to buy a home in a white, affluent neighborhood, and a white lawyer who helps them to do so because he was inspired by Martin Luther King and the civil rights movement.
Thank God, Tim, that the Bookers were able to buy a home in a white, affluent neighborhood in the late 60s in the United States of America. It's that kind of coming together, I think, that we can look forward to see from his leadership on the issue.
Well, I will say one thing about Cory Booker that I can't say about any of these other Democrats. And that is that he lives in a basically at best working class or poor Black community, and he's continued to live there. He's lived the life. Okay, he can say that he's lived the life that these other Democrats have not. I mean, he has an authenticity to him and his experience that the other ones don't have. Don't get me wrong. I think the guy's a complete non-starter. He's not going to get the nomination. I don't even think he's going to come close. But at least there's some authenticity. He's lived what he's preaching, unlike so many of these others.
In some way, he's not phony enough to do it. I saw a press conference.
I saw a press conference that he gave
shortly after the announcement, the sort of prepackaged announcement came out.
Right, which was pretty impressive, by the way. I thought it was pretty well done.
Yeah, well, the press conference was not pretty well done. And you can see, you know, we all kind of rail against these things that are like so tightly managed that not a single hair could be out of place and allow for any realism. But then at the same time, there's the opposite end of that, which is that it's a little rinky-dink or not sufficiently structured. Right. I thought that that's what his press conference was like. But yeah, he does have a I pick up that sincerity vibe from him too. Maybe it's earnestness actually is probably a better word.
Well, let's put it on issues of race. He's got more credibility than any of the other Democrats that are running for president. But
they called. So I left in the early part about what the CNN presenter said about Kamala Harris, Tim, because I thought it was interesting that they are casting her as an African-American, which she has tried to do in all but words. If they ask her about it now, she says she prefers to just not. Oh, she's not going to focus on race. I am what I am. But in all other instances, in symbolism with the Oakland launch and other things, she has positioned herself as the African-American woman candidate.
She's actually Jamaican Indian. And she, you know, she's going more after the women, Scott, than the black vote, whereas Cory Booker's going more
Asian now, Tim.
Yeah, I don't know.
They always keep changing the words. I was just kind of joking on that. Sorry.
Now, the problem with Cory Booker is that when he's in an official capacity as a senator, he has a tendency to make a total fool out of himself with his Spartacus moment, with his phony, contrived tears of rage. Do you remember that one? I mean, it was so contrived. And then he embarrassed himself, and I want you to listen to it this week. He was making a play for the LGBTQ+ community. As a presidential candidate, when he was...
It's two pluses. I just don't want to be accused of a hate crime.
Oh, it's two pluses. Okay, thank you. Okay, plus squared or something like that. Okay.
The second plus is you really mean all the...
hate crime by leaving out the extra plus sign. Okay. I love your sensitivity, Scott. Sure. You're a very sensitive guy. This week on the Judiciary Committee, he was questioning a federal judge who was put up by President Trump, Naomi Rao, okay? And he was trying to basically buttonhole her on the whole idea of LGBTQ++ rights because she's a Christian. She's a professing Christian and therefore believes that the Bible teaches that that is wrong. Without playing the whole thing, she gave a sort of generic response to her feeling about LGBTQ stuff. Mm-hmm. And then listen to Booker come back at her.
Senator, I think, you know, civil rights and equal protection of the laws are two essential values in our system. And if I were to be confirmed as a judge, I would firmly uphold that.
Have you ever had an LGBTQ law clerk?
I've not been a judge, so I don't have any law clerks.
I'm someone working for you.
I'm to be honest, I don't know the sexual orientation of my staff. I take people as they come, you know, irrespective of their race, ethnicity, sexual orientation. I treat people as individuals.
Now, we can't have that. We can't have treating people as individuals because they don't. Then you don't get to check the boxes on the intersectionality.
Yeah, the right way to answer that question is to turn it around and say, I would never ask somebody who works for me about their sexuality. Right. That doesn't seem to have a place in the workplace, Senator. I don't know why you would want me to do that.
And that, you know, the not knowing that she didn't have law clerks because she's not a judge is just kind of a humorous moment. But the
for
fact
a senator
that
who sits on the Judiciary Committee.
But the fact that he was asking her, have you ever had, you know, an LGBTQ
and by the way,
employee?
Would it make...
How inappropriate is that?
I don't know that the question itself is inappropriate. It's a, you know, it's a political position. And he's a politician.
Scott, how many Asians have ever worked for you?
Well, exactly.
Count them up.
Exactly. If he was in California instead of New Jersey and there was a whiff of that might help him get elected to something, that's probably what he would ask. You know, this is how he's going to win the Democrat primary for president, as far as he's concerned. Get the blacks and get the LGBTQ community on his side. And that's a path to winning the nomination. Now, I don't think it's a path of the presidency, but I disagree with you that maybe you just said he embarrassed himself. Okay, I was going to say that another presidential candidate embarrassed themselves even more this week. And I put this clip up and Tim said... it's a 4-minute clip. You know, I got a Warren clip that's a couple minutes, you know, half or a third as long. Why don't we play that one? And the point of the clip is that it is so long. Elizabeth Warren
She's just the gift that keeps on giving.
She got a card, her Texas bar membership card, she listed as Native American as race on it. And because of the
And by the way, she had said before that she had never used that to advance her career. Yeah. Uh-huh. It had nothing to do. It was something that Harvard did.
So the bugaboo that the, I guess the actual tribal members have is that who determines tribal citizenship and tribal membership, okay, and tribal sovereignty. So for 4 minutes, she just says it over and over again. So I just wanted you to play it, and then you can stop playing it at any time you want, because it just, it's about a 15-second clip that repeats itself over and over again of Elizabeth Warren making a fool of herself.
Let me just make this point, because I'll forget it after the four-minute clip is over, probably. It's ironic that she would try to use the percentage of her blood to claim minority status, when that's exactly what had been used by white racists to determine if someone was black. Yeah. If they had 1 ounce, one drop of black blood, they were considered black. And it wasn't for the advantage of the person. Let's just put it that way. So now it's returning it around and using that same process to prove your bona fides as an oppressed minority.
It wasn't even proven because the guy used South American DNA that had nothing to do with Native Americans.
All right, you want to play this? All right, here.
Yeah.
Why did you list yourself as an American Indian on this Texas bar application?
So this was about 30 years ago, and I am not a tribal citizen. Tribes and only tribes determine citizenship. When I was growing up in Oklahoma, I learned about my family the same way most people do. My brothers and I learned from our mom and our dad and our brothers and our sisters, and those were our family stories. But that said, there really is an important distinction of tribal citizenship. I am not a member of a tribe, and I have apologized for not being more sensitive to that distinction. It's an important distinction.
The president has made the case that you've used this part of your background to get ahead. Are you saying that this is something you fundamentally believed about yourself, or how do you respond to that criticism, that this was a knowing attempt to get ahead by using that claim of ancestry?
So that is a claim that has been fully investigated, and it has now been shown completely that nothing about my background ever had anything to do with any job I got in any place. It's been fully documented.
Okay, that's enough. I mean, because
except for the fact that Harvard, by the way, advertised that she was their first Native American professor, and she made sure in these places, Tim, that care more about checking off these boxes than anything else, that was front and center at the University of Pennsylvania. And gee, I happen to have some.
And now the Texas bar. I mean, that absolutely. That settles the case. And, you know, Scott, she's got to be the most insecure politician, because she cannot or will not be who she really is. And I'm not just talking about the fake Indian thing. How about the fake normal heartland gal?
Getting her husband a beer at the...
And talking about her...
Alexandria Ocasio.
And talk about her daddy.
Well, you've been in the room with those political consultants. You know that it's like...
I mean, why...
You know that that she listened to them. They said, look, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is getting all this traction, making, you know, chicken soup in her kitchen. You got to get on Instagram and do this. And so she does.
She has become, if she wasn't already, a complete laughing stock. And
I mean, the way she keeps saying, no matter what they say, she's like, tribes determine tribal citizenship.
I know,
I'm not a member of any tribe.
Like,
nobody's saying you are, lady. We're just asking about this bar application.
In other words, she didn't answer the question.
Right.
There was no answer there.
Yes.
She was just repeating the best way to try to put a good face
on this.
And
the sort
thing.
Of big time legacy media people seem to be, as long as the Indians, the actual tribal leaders sort of give her a pass on it. I guess she thinks that, you know, she's going to be good with it. You know, it's just hilarious when she keeps saying, she keeps looping her family into it, not her parents. She keeps looping her brother into it. She says, well, my brother and I. It's like, just say, that's what I thought I was.
If
that's your story, stick to it and say, I wrote that because that's what I thought I was.
If she has the kind of brains in her head that she supposedly had as a professor at Harvard and all this stuff, I mean, she would just pull out right now. I mean, there's no chance. There's not one chance in a million that the Democratic Party is going to nominate this woman in a field of probably two dozen or more candidates. I mean, she's culturally appropriating. She's not a person of color. She is a woman. Her time has come and gone. She should have run in 2016.
What other members of the Judiciary Committee might we be treated to to presidential?
So let's see. So it's Booker and Kamala Harris and Klobuchar, I guess, is going to run as well.
Feinstein definitely is not going to.
No,
run,
no,
right?
She's a little too old. Uh-huh. 85 years old.
Not 85 years young, Tim.
Not going to happen. Oh, that's such an elegant turn of phrase. I'm awed. I'm awed by your eloquence, Scott. But then you already knew that. All right. So where do we go from here?
My strong suit. All right. Well, I know you want to talk a little bit about some Democrat stuff, and State of the Union did happen. So we should give that a quick shout. I don't think we need to play any clips from it because it's – well, excuse me.
I want to play one.
I'm not going to play any clips from it, but I think that the best part for me, and before we get to your clip, was that Donald Trump made a clear stance against what I think is going on in the society, which is a sort of creeping socialism. He said that we're not and never will be a socialist country. I certainly hope that's true. You know, if the people of the country agree with him, that will be true. And if they don't, then it won't. I certainly hope that the people are in agreement when the rubber meets the road.
Well, look, he's laying the groundwork for this is, in a sense, kind of an opening salvo for the 2020 presidential campaign. Capitalism versus socialism. He didn't use the word capitalism because now it has all these negative connotations. Mm-hmm. But he certainly did use socialism. That's for
tonight,
sure.
Tonight, we renew our resolve that America will never be a socialist country. We are born free and we will stay free.
I like that part. We were born free and we'll stay free. I thought that was a very good turn of phrase. And it was this whole thing was very embarrassing to Democrats, some of whom are actual declared Democratic socialists like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And Nancy Pelosi didn't know how to react, but let's not get into the whole reaction thing. Here was my favorite. That was my favorite part of it because he was laying down a marker to the American people. You need to realize that this party is going full socialist and we're not going to let it happen. But this was the one that I really thought was delicious.
Wealthy politicians and donors push for open borders while living their lives behind walls and gates and guards. Meanwhile, working class Americans are left to pay the price for mass illegal immigration.
So what he did was he unveiled yet another layer of Democrat hypocrisy with people like Nancy Pelosi, who have not just lived behind walls, but are protected by armed guards. Okay, so you bring the guns into it, you bring the walls into it, and he's saying, don't look at what they're saying. Don't listen to what they're saying. Look at what they do, and that'll tell you who they really are as opposed to how they're posturing that a wall is a terrible thing, even though walls always work, because, quite simply, Donald Trump is in favor of it. It's just that simple.
Yeah, the truth is that walls do work, and you can still oppose a wall even recognizing that they work, as I do. I recognize that a wall, a well-built, constructed, designed wall system will significantly cut down on illegal immigration and the passage of contraband across the border. I grant that, and still oppose its construction. Those two things are not,
Right. You can isolate
logically inconsistent.
You isolate the subjective question of whether a wall is appropriate and the question of whether it works.
And if it didn't work,
they wouldn't keep building them.
Honestly, because the real answer is that it is a massive source of votes for her and her party, that of all these people coming up, some infinitesimally small number of them would not vote Democrat in any election. And so it's a massive influx of Democrat votes, and that's why she supports it. It goes back, Tim, the motor voter bill, that people don't seem to talk about this. This sealed our fate. What the motor voter bill said was, if you can when you register to get a when you get a driver's license in any state in America, they have to have an electronic process in place to let you register to vote right there, and you don't have to have a birth certificate to get a driver's license in most states. So that has led to all these problems where, you know, the idea that, you know, Stacey Abrams, Tim, in the Democratic rebuttal went on and on about the problem with voter suppression in this country. And I want to say right now that voter suppression is real and affects a tiny number of people compared to the number of people who are illegal immigrants who vote in national, state, and local elections. And so I'm happy to talk with Stacey Abrams about voter suppression because it's real. But let's also not pretend that it's, you know, that I'm not going to believe my own lying eyes that they want these people because they want voters. And that's the real reason.
Now, the left is always claiming there's no evidence of a voter fraud, that the two people in the whole country have been convicted of it, so therefore it doesn't happen. But the real proof, Scott, comes in the places, and I don't have the number of places or the exact numbers of how many more people voted than were on the rolls. But there are documented cases, mostly in California, of where there are more people voting in a district than there are registered to vote. That's proof positive.
And in a similarly situated community, you'd have maybe, what, 60% participation?
Right, exactly. And you're getting 115% or 110%.
That happened in Philadelphia as well, which is
a place. I'm shocked at that.
So that's exactly right. It's a Democrat-run city. And I can tell you that Tim, my aunt told me a story once about one of her early times in a voting booth. Now, this was probably, 60 years ago, I'm guessing, but literally a hand came in through the curtain in the booth to turn the lever and she slapped the hand away.
And voted for the Democrat anyway.
You know what? Knowing my aunt, I don't know. At her age then, perhaps probably that's true. Later in life, she probably would have split the ticket. But
think, Scott, of how patronizing it is to say that there's voter suppression because they require you to have one form of ID to prove that you are who you say you are, and then it eliminates a lot of black voters. What's the implication they're making there that, black people aren't smart enough to be able to get a driver's license or a state ID? There's something incredibly patronizing about the whole basis of their voter suppression argument.
So in part, that's entirely true, and in part, you're wrong. And so I'll say this. In some places, and I think maybe Alabama, I don't want to besmirch the Alabamans, but there are some states where they actually have, if you look at where the offices where one could get such an ID used to be, like there was one in every county, for instance, and then that's a valid argument. Sure, it's an inconvenience, but given the stakes, it's an inconvenience. You're just going to have to.
So, in other words, when they close offices where people would ordinarily.
But it's like if you have to drive 2 hours to get to one of those places and you don't have a car, well, now you may be presenting a,
Does someone actually, are there places where you have to drive 2 hours to be eligible to vote?
I can't tell you that it's 2 hours. I have looked on a map, though, commensurate with reading one of these stories and thought to myself, going in with the attitude that you have of, I understand it's a hardship to take off an afternoon at work, but we're talking about the vote here. Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead and suck it up and do it. And then when I had finished looking at that data, I thought, this place needs to open some more offices where people can get these, make it the county courthouse in every county, something like that. So you can't make that argument, and make it a free thing for people who don't already have a driver's license. What's the problem there? So it's no money. Certainly it's a little time and hassle, but that's it. And that's the price of ensuring
free and fair elections.
I mean, you're okay with like Mexicans have a far greater influence on our vote than Russians do, but we're turning the world upside down to get to the Russian influence. Meanwhile, literally, the Mexican influence of Mexican nationals in the United States has a much greater influence of the actual vote.
I will say this about Stacey Abrams. I was impressed by her oration during her Georgia gubernatorial race, which she almost won, which is very impressive for a Democrat in Georgia, which is a changing state, but it's
running
still on Georgia.
A hardcore gun control.
Absolutely. But platform. She almost won. But I will say this. I do have some sympathy for the fact that she was running against a guy who's who was the Secretary of State in charge of voting in the state. And that by itself is an issue.
It's gross and disgusting. He should be disallowed from entering that race.
I agree.
Or had resigned his office for doing so.
I have resigned his office, let's say 6 months at least, maybe a year before. Because you can't have the person who's in charge of voting.
He should be constitutionally barred from that position.
Yeah.
Maybe forever, too. I mean, I don't know. But certainly not in the same cycle. I don't know how we got back on to future rising Democrat star Stacey Abrams, but there we go. All right, anything else, or is that it for
I think
the
that's all. I think all that's all the fun we're allowed to have.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Uprising. For Tim Donner and for LibertyNation.com, this is Scott Cosenza. Bye-bye.
See you next week.